Hi, you're listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition, where we bring you the latest trends in the oncology pharmacy space. I'm your host, Alex Gerlach, and I'm excited to bring to you our next installment in the series on antibody-drug conjugates and breast cancer. In this episode, our experts will be discussing how drug design impacts drug efficacy, as well as indications for HER2-low and the new HER2-ultra-low. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it over to our pharmacists.
Dr. Hill, I guess along some of those lines, and I think this was alluded to a little bit, but how are the efficacy and adverse event profiles of different ADCs influenced by their drug components and linker designs, like was just discussed? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, thank you. As you mentioned, Dr. DeMarco and Dr. Hunter did a really great job of kind of explaining how these ADCs work and some of the differences that we're seeing based off of how they're designed. And I totally agree with the discussion on the linkers. So from an efficacy perspective, I think it probably doesn't really matter what the cytotoxic component is if you can't get it to the cell appropriately. And so I think a lot of that is driven by that linker design. So when thinking about what are the important factors in designing ADCs, I fully agree that it is important to have effective cytotoxic payloads, but really that linker is especially important because you want to make sure it is getting to the target cell the way it needs to, and then additionally getting internalized in a way that can have optimum cytotoxic effect.
So I think what we've seen over the last couple of years especially is this new indication of HER2-low that has now moved on to HER2-ultra-low, which really emphasizes the importance of how do we identify these patients. As was mentioned a little bit earlier, what we know now based off the recent FDA update for the indication is that now T-DXd is approved for ultra-low and HER2-low patients. So with that, Dr. Taraba, how can we optimize HER2 testing and ADC treatment selection considering this tumor heterogeneity across different cancer sites?
Thank you, Dr. Moore. HER2 heterogeneity can be detected by both conventional IHC, gene expression profiling, or other methods. And HER2 heterogeneity is defined as different expression or amplification status within the same tumor or tumors from different locations, and has been reported in up to 40% of breast cancers. Given this can impact the degree of benefit that we see with HER2 targeted therapies. With the development of some of the more potent antibody drug conjugates, such as trastuzumab deruxtecan, these have the ability to target HER2 in these HER2 low tumors. We also see, as was discussed earlier, that bystander effect that can act on both target cell and on surrounding cells, those cells which may or may not express that HER2 antigen. So this is where we see a lot of that benefit in tumor responses in HER2 low and HER2 heterogeneous breast cancer. As was alluded, the toxicity of these antibody drug conjugates are related primarily to the release of that cytotoxic payload, and we see both those off-target sites as well as those bystander effects. So looking at the different ones that we've talked about, T-DXd targets HER2 with a topoisomerase inhibitor. And some of the common side effects that we see with that one are nausea, fatigue, and that risk of interstitial lung disease or pneumonitis. We see with the T-DXd, it has a high drug-to-antibody ratio of 8:1, which results in higher concentrations and delivery of the medication. And then also cardiotoxicity from targeting HER2. With sacituzumab, or SG, it targets TROP2, and it also has a topoisomerase payload. And a little bit different side effect profile with that one, with neutropenia and diarrhea being most common. And then the Dato-DXd, again, also targets TROP2, has that deruxtecan topoisomerase inhibitor payload. And again, some very different side effects that we see with that one as well, the stomatitis, ocular toxicity, but also that same risk of interstitial lung disease or pneumonitis.
All right. And with that, so I'm just wondering, are there any additional biomarkers beyond HER2 that can help guide metastatic breast cancer therapy selection? And then also along those lines, we've kind of gone through, and Dr. Taraba did a great job of how we can optimize HER2 testing, but we haven't talked about TROP2 testing. So would love to get an idea of, are we doing TROP testing? Is it necessary? Why or why not? Dr. Hunter, I will send those questions your way.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Moore. And I think that when we start having all of these tests, these biomarkers that we're trying to identify which ones are actually significant as far as affecting efficacy and which ones are not significant when it comes to efficacy, a great part of the discussion to have. With PD-L1, you know that we have some keynote data to show in a metastatic setting that it actually is dependent on the efficacy of those treatments. While you move into BRCA and you can, add a PARP inhibitor to the possible treatments that a patient can receive if there's that germline mutation. But when you talk about TROP2, which I kind of alluded to earlier, is 85% of tumors have some TROP2 expression, but then we don't identify if a patient has overexpression of TROP2 on their tumor. So that 15% that don't have TROP2, are they still getting the SG? Are they still getting what exactly are we doing? Are we going to avoid the drug? And the answer is no. It's been confirmed in all of the phase three pivotal trials, whether you're talking about the TROPICS or the ASCENT, that the TROP2 expression is not directly related to efficacy, and we can maintain efficacy even if the TROP2 is not overexpressed. And I think that's an important thing for you as the audience and us as practitioners to understand when we're doing these biomarker testing. And I think there's a few others, and I think I'll pass it off to Dr. DeMarco to elaborate on those.
Sure, thank you. I think in this space, I'm also thinking about ESR1 mutations, especially in our patients who have had previous CDK4/6 inhibitors, because we know that ESR1 mutations are due to endocrine therapy resistance. So definitely thinking about that when patients start to progress on endocrine therapy. Other biomarkers we can consider are our PIK3CA activating mutations, our ACT1 activating mutations, our PTEN alterations. And again, like you mentioned, Dr. Hunter, these studies have shown that the patients in these cases benefit from these treatments if they have these mutations or alterations. So that's why they're kind of approved in those kind of niche populations. I think where things get a little bit tricky with PIK3CA, ACT1, and PTEN is that you can totally do a liquid biopsy on these patients, but if the liquid biopsy is negative, then you have to go back and get tissue if you don't have any on hand. So I think that does make things a little bit hairy in this space. But definitely still options for patients with those mutations. And then every time I get this question about biomarkers, I feel like I bring up NTRK and RET because one day I hope to see a patient with one of these fusions. But they do have targeted therapy options. They are available to patients. They're just super rare, and not many people will see them in their breast cancer clinics.
I too am waiting for the one day we can targeted therapies. The one day it will happen. All
We have
right.
seen one. I will say it does happen.
It's
Not very often, but it does.
always important just to kind of keep in the back of our minds. I feel like we're so used to some of the others, but some of the random less than 1% that we don't often see in breast cancer can easily get lost.
Thanks for listening to our second installment in the series on ADCs and breast cancer. We'll be bringing to you the next episodes every week over the course of May, featuring key insights from experts in the field. So with that, take care, and I'll see you in the next one.